You're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another Fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/cc and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
Alrighty, what day is it? It's Monday, June 15th, 2015, the Ides of June, which is a Roman term for Ides. Oh, I don't even know what Ides means. Idibus. I took Latin in grade 9, and Ides is English for Idibus, which I think is the middle of, or something to do with the moon or something. But since we live in the Roman Empire, just hidden in plain sight, I figure it's important to know Latin words. We really should know Latin, especially if we want to get into medicine or the law. John Adams, welcome. John Adams, go ahead.
I'm here, sir. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Welcome, John. Happy Monday. How was your weekend?
It was very nice. How was yours?
It was full of work. I think I work more at home than I do at my pay job where they pay me electronic bits every day.
Yeah, I know. I know what you mean, but it's fun work.
Yeah. Well, it can be. It can be. I put up an electrical fixture, and I didn't get shocked, so that's always a good thing.
Did it shock you that you didn't get shocked? That was bad. I'm sorry.
Shocked, but I wasn't shocked. You got that right. I've been shocked by more than one electrical appliance in my time. I used to work in a lighting store, and no matter how hard I tried, as soon as you let down your guard, there's a live wire waiting to attack you. Right around the corner. Now, that's real fear when that happens, believe me.
There's an AC/DC song called Live Wire. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I like a lot of AC/DC. I probably would know it if I heard the music, if I heard the intro. So I haven't checked the statistics to see if anyone's listening to us, but I'm enjoying these calls. You forced me to find a way to record telephone calls, because I've had many calls with many other people in the past, and I always wished I could record them, because I think some of my greatest thoughts come when I'm not paying attention to really what I'm doing. And so I'm glad that you forced me to figure out how to make it happen.
Hello?
And John and I seem to be hanging out every weekday at 4:30, sometimes not, but I actually really enjoy the calls because there's no real pressure to perform. And I find the weekends, I'm becoming like you. I don't want to do any thinking or talking. I like just being, not having a pressure to do something. That's probably a smart thing.
Hold on, I'm paying for some raw milk right now.
Ah. Well, we'll truncate the silence. Anytime we don't have anything to talk about, we'll just truncate it in the post-production, as we call it, in Fakeologist Audio. Now, I do post the times when we're doing these calls at chat.fakeologist.com. If anyone's interested in joining in, you're more than welcome. I'll just put a little note at chat.fakeologist.com, and you can just join us. And the way you join us, if anywhere in the world where there's an access number, or even if there's no access number, you can use Skype to call an American number. South Dakota, it would seem. And all those numbers are at fakeologist.com/cc. And for all those people that don't have a computer, don't want to use a computer, and somehow found out about us, you can join us. And we just talk about a lot of fakery stuff, not just fakery, but as of late, I have been watching a pretty fascinating film on the Masonry initiation rite. It's sort of what I thought it might be.
What's that?
I'm watching a YouTube that someone cobbled together from, it looks like, a 70s Christian television show, and they put it all in one two-hour YouTube. And it's about the, it says it's about the initiation rites of one, two, three.
Yeah, I started watching that.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, because I was hoping we could just yak a little bit about it, because it's pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, where to begin, but,
Is it sort of like what you thought it would be like to be initiated? If in fact it's true, let's be honest, we don't know for sure, but if it's true, is it what you thought an initiation could be like? And I, for me, I think it is sort of what I thought it might be.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before with Chris. I used to work with some guys who were Masons, okay?
Yeah.
At a real estate office, okay? And
okay.
So they take it very seriously, but they try to act like it's not that big of a deal. It's pretty funny, right?
Contradiction almost.
Yeah.
More than funny.
Well, yeah, Here was a funny thing. I was in the elevator one day, and this is a very small office too. This is a small enough office to where I knew the vice president, and I knew the president by name, and I could go to lunch with them. It wasn't like they were all removed from the other employees or anything, right?
Right.
And so I knew that the president was not a Mason, at least that's what he said, but the other guys flaunted it, like they would wear Freemason rings, and they would talk openly about it and invite some of the loan officers and loan processors to, come to meetings and stuff, right?
Okay.
And so I was completely and totally unaware of this until one day I went into the elevator, and one of the vice presidents was in the elevator, and he was holding a book with a square and compass on it. And so I was like kind of staring at it, and it was, I know that they don't actually give copies of Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma out to initiates anymore. They give kind of this book that has like a bunch of different type of Masonic quotes and things in there, right? And so these guys were low level Masons. I want to say I don't know if they may still give out Morals and Dogma to someone like once they get up into a higher degree. But anyways, he had this book and had a square and compass on it. So I just remarked to him. I said, "Oh, brushing up on your Albert Pike, huh?" And he got kind of a cross face when I said that. Right? Are you still there, Tim?
I'm here, John. I just muted because there was somebody backing up with a very annoying buzzer on his vehicle.
So anyways, he kind of got a cross face and then didn't say anything and just walked out of the elevator. And usually he was very friendly and that type of stuff. So I'm all, oh, shoot. Hopefully I don't arrive tomorrow and I've got my walking papers. Anyways, nothing happened and that was that. Then I was telling a fellow employee about, Freemasonry and stuff like that, and I was telling him this guy was a Christian guy, and I was telling him, well, yeah, they worship Lucifer. It's openly well known that they worship Lucifer. Well, they don't openly worship Satan, though, right? And I was telling him this in the lunchroom, and that same vice president came into the lunchroom, and he said, what are you guys talking about? And I was like, oh, man, I hope this guy doesn't say anything. And sure enough, he did. He said, oh, John was just telling me how the Masons worship Satan.
Uh-oh, that doesn't sound good.
And I'm all, What could happen? I said, that's not what I said. I did not say that the Masons worship Satan. I did not say that because I already knew he was a Mason. But, see, the guy I was telling didn't know that, so... So after he walked, he kind of like, shook his head. He's like, oh, really? Huh. Okay. And, he just walked out of the lunchroom and I smacked the guy on the shoulder. I'm like, dude, Well, he's a Mason. And he was like, oh, he is? I'm all, yeah. I'm all, good job, you know. And so anyways, a little bit later in the day, I get a phone call from that vice president. And he calls me up and he says, I need you to come to my office. So I was like, okay. So I go in there, and him and the other vice president are sitting in there. They've got very serious looks on their faces. And I said, what's up, guys? And they said, we want to know what you know about Freemasonry. I said, oh, I don't really know that much. I'm not a Freemason. And I said, so I'm also the other guy's name. One guy's name was Dennis, one guy's name was John, and the other guy called John. So I did not know that you were either. He's all, yeah, let's not talk about us actually being one. It was pretty hilarious. Well, listen,
I don't have anything against secret societies or Freemasonry, but I would like to understand it, since we're being told that they're part of the power structure, and they're part of the group that is creating all these, or has a hand in the elite psyops and hoaxes. That's the only interest I really have in it now.
Here's a point. Just let me make a point real quick. Is, you see, there, I just worked in a real estate office. No big deal. And there were, like, five guys who worked in there who were Masons, right?
That's a high percentage.
Yeah, so I'm gonna guess that in, I wouldn't say every business, but I would say a lot of businesses, that there's a lot of guys who are Freemasons. And they have a particular job to do, whether they know it or not. And they really do think that they're kind of, you know, part of a power structure. They know it. They're aware of it. Because I've got those guys to kind of talk candidly about it. But at the same time, it's like they kind of open up about it, but then they start, like, thinking about what it is that they're saying, and then they kind of go, no. All we do is just go, you know, to the hospitals and you know, bring flowers.
Charity.
Kids with cancer.
But, do charity but then, stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but then they'll, in the same conversation, they'll be like, you know, there's city council members that come to the meetings and things, and then, like, they're like, oh, shoot, what did I just say? Like, pretty funny.
Well, that's the whole point. The whole point is, does the public have a right to know about the people that make laws and set behavior in powerful positions, whether they be in corporations or government? Do they have the right to know that a group or whoever these people are in these positions of power belong to secret societies like Masonry, where they pledge allegiance to each other before anything else?
Yep.
And according to this YouTube, which I posted on my blog, fakeologist.com, I posted that yesterday or today, June 14th, June 15th, 2015, if you want to look it up, if anyone's listening to this later on, which people are listening, thankfully. Take a look, and it looks like they can be punished by death if they betray the secrets that they are given, and the main secrets they're told to keep are those pertaining to Freemasonry, and they even go through some kind of ritual at the beginning where they have three ruffians that start roughing up the candidate, and as to people trying to get the secrets of Masonry, and you're not supposed to give them up unless you'd rather give your life than give up the secrets. This is a big deal. Now, the video is from a perspective of a Christian broadcasters that are just trying to find out if being a Christian conflicts with being a Mason, and it's pretty clear from the video that there is a big conflict when you're pledging allegiance to anyone other than Jesus Christ as a Christian. Now, I don't identify myself as a Christian or a Mason or any other group. I've just fallen in between the religious and organizational cracks, I suppose, but I'm in a pretty large group, I think, these days. But that's really where they're coming from in the video, because it appears that the 32-degree Mason in the video is saying, no, there's no conflict, and he was equivocating and hedging his answers, and it looked like he was uncomfortable because he was being put on the spot. But it seems like a lot of the hoaxes and psyops that go on in our world, they are poking fun a lot of the times at Christians, which is probably the largest group of organized individuals in the United States to this day, I think. So they're constantly poking and prodding them with satanic-type ideas, knowing full well that they will get a rise out of Christians, for instance, which would be how you could sort of torture people into understanding that it isn't Christians that are in charge and creating these events and then subsequent laws. So that's the only angle I really am considering. But again, the reason I posted the video is one of the common denominators of all psychological operations. People always say, well, an operation that big, somebody would talk. Now, the average person would probably agree with that statement. Somebody would talk. Somebody would spill the beans. But if the military and or Masons or Freemasons or even small Jewish communities or any community is involved in these psyops, then the answer is they're not going to talk. And they have sworn oaths up and down. And there's a really great motivating factor to not talk, as well as the money and riches that await them if they do as they're told. So really, I'm just trying to show people that people will not talk, and they are motivated in a million different ways. And that's how these things go on. And people need to understand that these societies exist. They swear secrets. They pledge allegiance to each other and the organization before any other organization. And therefore, you need to be aware of that. So you can, that can be one more excuse for not looking at psyops and tossing them out as coincidence, because I think they've just basically blown away the one big excuse where all those people couldn't keep a secret. Well, yes, they could, and that's really the length of my investigation on that.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree with everything that you just said.
Okay.
And, you know, if you look at fakery and hoaxes, you know, this is another thing that started to resonate with me, because I had looked into a lot of the occult aspects of you know, the workings of this world. And then once I started to think about it, I'm all, you know, to actually fake something is much more occult than to have it actually play itself out, you know?
Yeah, like, it's the definition of occult, deception, hiding, hidden, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is magic. You know, it's the definition of magic is to fake people out and make them think something happened when it didn't happen. So
yeah.
So that was another convincing factor for me, because I started looking at it from that perspective, and I was like, oh, this is the epitome of magic right here, is pulling off something without actually pulling anything off.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it definitely, you know, factors into it. And like I said, I personally don't know for a fact that every single event under the sun is, you know, without deaths or you know, which ones are real and which ones aren't real or anything like that. But at least the big ones that we've discussed, I know, are pretty darn fake top to bottom.
Yeah, and the main reason that you look at these big events is, and understand how they're fake and all the different aspects of fakery, witnesses, scripting, repeating, recurring themes and memes. When you start to see all these and are familiar with the techniques of fakery, then you're going to be much more sensitive to any media brought before you. And therefore, you'll be much many of the media stories, or at least understand how they can be exaggerated, blown out of proportion, start off with a small bit of truth and then just a huge story built around them. You can just start to understand what you're being fed every day and probably be really relieved, is my point. And that's the only reason that I keep looking at it, because we're thrown every day an entire menu of stories. Every day we get a large list of stories that we're supposed to think about, chew about, talk about, be worried about, and you can close your eyes to them and you can ignore them. That's a good technique too. I'm not going to dismiss it, but if you have this constant hankering like I do to be somewhat aware of what's going on, because you're in the system. If you're out there participating, working, driving, if you're in the system, you're going to have to be able to manipulate and work your way through it. So wouldn't you rather be well-equipped and able to maneuver and negotiate around knowing what we've discovered? For me, the answer is definitely yes.
Yep. You know, it's funny. I think on one of the early calls with Chris, I read from a book that I had found, and it's the story of a town not too far away from where I work. It's called Garden Grove, California. And I found it at the library, and it says the history of, you know, the city of Garden Grove. And apparently it was a book that was distributed to high school libraries at one time.
Okay.
So I picked up this book, and then I'd shown it to a friend, and they said, oh, yeah, I remember that those books, that every town used to have a book like that at one time. So I thought that was interesting. And so I started reading this and just kind of flipping through it, and then I started thinking, well, I'm going to look up Freemasons. So I go to the index, and I look up Freemasons, and turns out it has its own place in the index there. So I go to the page, and so the page starts talking about the Masonic Lodge in Garden Grove, California, which was at one time the upper level of the high school. Okay, so it was actually located in the school.
Yeah,
and so it started to make sense once I started reading. That I'm not kidding. Literally, all of the men who were the first people to start the city were all one guy who owned the biggest orange farm was the worshipful master, and the guy who ran the general store was the tiler, and it was literally all of the guys who started the city were all Masons. So it confirmed that in my research there. I'm like, oh, okay. So this is just a little bitty town right in Southern California that most people are never even going to pass through. And it's literally probably about 10 miles wide, 10 miles long.
Yeah.
Most people don't even know that it exists, yet it was started by Freemasons. And just the small town that I grew up in has a Masonic Lodge. The town that I live in right here has a Masonic Lodge. And I pass a Masonic Lodge every day going into work in the town that I work in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And does that, just knowing that, what does that do for you, knowing that? Is that important?
Well, it's like you said, if this, system's going to work the way that it's allegedly supposed to work, where people are going to supposedly elect people to office.
Yeah,
you would need to know if they were, a Freemason, a Knight of Columbus, an Odd Fellow, a Knight of Malta, whatever it is. You should know that about them.
Mm-hmm.
And you should ask them questions about it. You should say, well, hey, I don't care if it's the local Moose Lodge, you should know what organizations they belong to and what their allegiance is to those organizations, and if that is in any way going to affect their decisions on how they're going to lead you and rule over you, if that's what, if that's in fact what you want to happen. So
and redistribute your money, which are called taxes.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that aspect of it, and then another aspect of it is, and Chris has talked about this before, is you've got a Freemason's lodge in every town. Some towns, like the town I used to live in, Whittier, California. You go to Whittier, California, and it is so Freemasonic. Not only is the name Whittier, because the poet John Whittier was a Freemason. Every single street in that city has a Freemasonic name. It not only has a lodge, it also has a Masonic center. like an event center.
Right.
And then it has an office of the Odd Fellows there as well. It's got an Eastern Star lodge on top of that. And the Knights of Columbus are there. So it's like
they got everything covered. The Eastern Star is for women, right?
Yeah. And so no churches point any of this stuff out to anybody? I mean, I've gone to many, many churches over my lifetime, growing up in a Christian household. And the thing of it is people don't really even know. It's not like it's, oh, they're obscuring it, but I'm sure the pastors have some idea, and I'm sure even a lot of the pastors, belong to the lodges.
That's right. That's in that video. A lot of the left-hand or right-hand men are supposed to be some kind of pastor. Part of the whole power grid in the lodges.
That's right. And so, yeah, you have to think that over. Like, I remember Chris talking about this, saying that he asked the pastor of his church if it was, you know, like, hey, what about the Masonic Lodge over there? And that his pastor told him, oh yeah, don't worry about that. And then he's like, okay, I'm not going to go to this church anymore. So,
yeah, he was probably in it.
Exactly.
The pastor. Yeah.
So, if you know, like I said, even if you want to do it on
governments, most of the people that run for government are associated or affiliated with some kind of party system, some kind of organization that people can judge and people can make a choice about. Now, we all know that most of these parties, they just merge their ideas once they're in power anyway. And the excuse, of course, is we have to govern for everyone, which is such good plausible deniability right there. But at least we have a sense of where they're coming from when they identify with a particular political party. Even though, as I said, in the end, it all ends up being run by corporations and corporate interests. Because they have the money, and then they help shape laws and whatnot. But with the Masons, we don't get to know their platform. We don't know, other than the fact that they're there for the greater good, but they have a lot of other things that maybe people need to be aware of if they want those people in charge of the power structure. Now, I'm not saying they're necessarily evil. Now, as a Christian, it doesn't look like they would fit my or a Christian's way of thinking, but they are part of an organization, and they pledge allegiance to each other first before any other, and that includes the police and fire. So does that mean that we're all equal before the law? Well, automatically, I think you can answer no, right then and there. And this doesn't pertain to ethnicity or skin color. This pertains to what club you're in and maybe what degree you are in the club. That's my only real beef with secrecy. Of course, maybe people might say, well, you have a beef because you're not in the club. Well, maybe that too, but I'm not sure if you talk about them in the way we talk about, you can get in the club anymore. And I do like to be free about who or why, what I talk about, as long as it's not libelous or slanderous.
Yeah, well, see, even Canada was started by Masons. It's not only this good old alleged free republic here that we live in, and in the good old U.S.
Yeah.
of A. But,
yeah, well, we wouldn't know about that. We never are taught. We were not taught that in the history books, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Canadian flag, a maple leaf has a Masonic meaning to it.
Okay.
It's on one level, if I remember correctly, it's like
longevity and self-control, I think, is one of the meanings of it in masonry.
Okay.
Longevity and self-control. And I think they even give, like, little maple leaf pins to certain initiates.
Okay.
It just depends on which type of lodge you're in, I think.
Well, Canadian Lodge probably get a few of those things. But that's,
exactly.
I don't have a beef with masonry. It sounds on the surface like it's probably a good thing for men. That's certainly how they portray it. But the secrecy aspect conflicts with Christianity, apparently, according to this video, and it also conflicts with transparency and openness of the power structure. Those would be the two principal problems I have with it. And if these people are in a secret society, that also would potentially make them more vulnerable in a lot of ways to rules that we're not aware of and are not made public.
The thing is with religions, unfortunately, it's like which came first, the chicken or the egg. You know, a lot of the religions themselves have Masonic symbolism incorporated into it, and I guess on one hand, to use a Masonic phrase there, on one hand, you have you could say like, oh well, the Masons stole the religious symbolism and incorporated it into their stuff so that they could, you know, take over the religion. But you know, when you go back into the mystery religions, you find that most of those people, like the priests and the scribes and all that type of stuff, they already had a lot of the symbolism, you know, which predates Christianity and Islam and Judaism and everything else. It's all like from a previous time period, but yeah, all the religions use all of the same type of symbolism. So it's hard.
There's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of overlap. There's only so many symbols in the world.
Yeah, I take the notion that the religions themselves are akin to a temple that's going to be torn down and the new temple is going to be rebuilt on top of it. Or say, you know, two twin towers are going to be torn down and then a new one tower is going to be rebuilt on top of it. That's kind of how religions are. Religions are meant to exist during a particular time period. They serve a purpose for a particular time period, and it's coming to the end for the three main religions of the world, and the people who run it are the same people who are going to bring in the new religion, and the time's up for these old beliefs, and they're just going to give you a new belief once those old beliefs are gone.
Well, that's what we keep hearing. That's the theme and meme I keep hearing over and over again, that they're going to merge the religions, and the Pope will run them all out of Jerusalem after he wipes out the Muslim, whatever the name of the Muslim temple is, where the Temple of Solomon can be built. It all seems rather fantastical and mystical, but allegedly that is the end game.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it'll play itself out whatever people are predicting. I don't go for predictions, but I just think eventually, somewhere down the line, it's going to change, it's going to shift, and then however it plays itself out in history, they'll just, you know, write it as if it fulfilled some sort of prophecy.
Right. Do you want to change topics a bit and close out this call with some flat earth discussion and try and figure out what's going on and why it's a 2015 topic as opposed to in the past?
Yeah.
Why is it so hot? What are we watching play out before us?
That's interesting. I had a thought about this today. I rarely think about flat earth ever.
Do you think about the earth at all? The round ball, the blue marble, NASA?
It's not. NASA's interesting, but I just don't really, there's a lot of people out there who do a lot of discussion and research into flat earth versus round earth, and I'm sure there's not much room for me to get involved in that as well, but I was thinking about it today, because I was thinking about something, because apparently this is, you know, picking up steam in kind of more mainstream outlets.
Yeah.
And, you know, seen it on Coast to Coast AM.
It was on Coast to Coast?
Yeah.
I guess Mark was on there a bit, yeah.
Yeah, so So here's the thing. What if somebody says, hey, we can go back to flat Earth anytime we want. We can totally flip this around and get people to believe that flat Earth exists, just like we got them to believe round Earth exists.
Okay.
Right? And so whether or not, like, it's irrelevant to me whether the Earth is flat or round, right? But it's interesting that whatever it is you can get people to believe it's one thing in one time period and then something in another, and then flip it back again anytime that you want, you know? And so it's kind of what I was saying about the religions. It's like, you know, when they first rolled out Christianity, and some people tend to believe that was hijacked by the Catholic Church or the, Constantine. And so when they rolled that out, and it kind of, you know, took on its, took on how it took over the world and at the time period.
Yeah.
Well,
caught fire.
And then you have these people now who can look into it and say, well, it's kind of weird that this, you know, that there was this guy from that particular area at the time, and he was a historian. His name is Philo, and he doesn't even mention Jesus at all, right?
Yeah.
And so there's all of these discrepancies, and so people start asking these questions, like, okay, well, why is he's written in here, but it's only one line and one phrase about him, and then he's not written into the part where the guy who was the historian for that area at that time doesn't even mention him at all. And so, so you have these built-in things to where, like, later on you can dismantle the religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same way with flat Earth and round Earth to a certain extent, because someone could come along long after we've established that there was a round Earth, but there's so many holes in that story that you're able to pick it apart with the flat Earth, and then maybe 1,000 years from now, somebody's going to come along and they say, okay, these people are getting restless, let's distract them again. Okay, switch it back to the round Earth thing again.
Yeah.
Right? And then they pick apart all the holes in the flat Earth. And so I don't even know that we're not, I mean, we could be on a banana-shaped Earth. I have no idea.
So maybe this is just an exercise in seeing how we can convince and change people's belief systems, just like all the other major historical revisionism that we've seen. For instance, 9/11 and JFK, they're all pretty much solid state. They are as they were portrayed in the beginning, because the people that brought these hoaxes to us have maintained them well, and for most people it's irrelevant, the details, but it's there still nevertheless sealed into the history books as is, so any new minds that are brought up we'll learn what's left over, all the wars and fights over, for instance, 9/11. They will have been fought and lost the war for the mind in their respective generations as we disappear, and as the interest wanes, then it will remain as fact, even though it was we were so clearly convinced it was false, but doesn't matter. In the end, the creators will get what they want.
These unfortunately, I tend to believe this, but without a ray of hope. But unfortunately, all of these conversations in the end, they're going to be wiped out. Nobody's going to hear them. Nobody's going to hear any of the past fakeologists and hoaxbusters and everything else that's up there. That's all going to be gone. Nobody's going to write that into the history books, but.
Do we start etching the transcripts into bedrock somewhere? Would that be wise?
We might have to at some point. Into asphalt.
Asphalt you can pave over. Maybe we should find a big piece of rock somewhere and start chiseling away, and then hope that erosion and or other things don't wipe it away. Do you ever think that history, since we believe it repeats itself, do you ever think that society may have got to our point and been reset, just like a reset button on a computer, and all wiped out and returned back to zero, and then 1,000 more years or however long it took us to get to this point?
Yeah,
keep resetting. Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I do, because even if you look at ancient history, whether people believe that or not, there is a story that seems to go through all of it that at least happened at some point. And
yeah,
I don't believe in Atlantis or anything like that, but I do think that the Earth probably existed just as it does today, whether it's flat or round. And at some point there was something, there was, some form of life, some form of existence that was all over the Earth. And then at some point somebody said, okay, it's got to be a reset here because, for whatever
things
reason.
Getting, maybe too much power is going to the base, yeah.
Yeah, so I believe that. Yeah. And also, what you were just saying, it's real simple when it comes to JFK or 9/11. It's just an easy thing. And I was even telling somebody this today. I just say, when it comes to JFK or 9/11, I've just never seen, especially with JFK, I've never seen the video of what actually happened at the JFK at Daley Plaza. Because what we saw is not real.
Right. And they say it's not real. They say it's fabricated. Did you see that? I posted a 13-minute video by, and this is because of you, I looked up Errol, whatever his name was, Errol Morris, I believe?
Errol Morris, yeah. I saw what you posted, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, and the title of the post, I can't remember it now, but it was a catchphrase that I took out of that 13 or whatever minute. I didn't check the time on it, actually. Maybe I should have. And the catchphrase was that all the media that was shown that to represent that day, it all matched. They all matched Truder catching his video. So just that cross referencing alone, he was saying, is proof enough that it happened. I thought, wow, that is pretty smart.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, that's great. So
yeah,
you're saying, that's what I took away from it. I said, geez, and maybe that's really the crux of it. Maybe that's one of the elements of deception. That's maybe one of the ways you can do these things. It's great.
It is. I was the person who I was speaking to today, because this conversation got started by them asking me if I was going to see the new Jurassic Park movie, right?
Okay.
And so I was telling them, the only reason you think dinosaurs exist is because you're seeing the movie that reinforces the idea.
Yeah.
Right? Plus, you've been taught about it in school. And I even said to him, I said, I'm not saying that big lizards maybe didn't walk the earth at one time. But you can't have a lizard be a bird and be a fish and be a land creature and be a woolly mammal and whatever else, because, they would guilt by association type thing, try to group in like woolly mammoths with dinosaurs at one time, right? And they never outright ever said like, oh, woolly mammoth is a dinosaur, but it's always like kind of, grouped in with the same thing when they're trying to sell you on the idea of evolution. Like, oh, well, see, look, there was a dinosaur and it was a bird and birds turned, birds came out of that. There was evolution and all that type of stuff. So anyways.
And it is a dinosaur theory, right? Isn't it still called the dinosaur theory? Evolution theory?
Yeah.
Theory of gravity?
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like people have totally forgotten all that. And I mean, I'm sure you experienced this with your children growing up at some point, that dinosaurs are everywhere for kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it is all about dinosaurs. I mean, you walk into a bookstore or something for kids, and it's just dinosaurs everywhere.
Would you say space is also?
Space? Oh, yeah.
High up in children programming?
Yeah.
I call them space thieves. These astronauts are thieves. I really like that idea that I came up with, that they're there to steal children's imaginations, not stimulate them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And in the couple seconds I have here before I pull in my driveway, I recently saw people discussing Snoopy and NASA.
Scooby-Doo?
No, Snoopy.
Oh, Snoopy. Snoopy, yeah, Snoopy. Yeah, chat.fakeologist.com. They're talking about Snoopy. Yeah, I had no idea Snoopy was so heavily involved in the space program.
Yeah, I have a Charlie Brown book at my house, for a leftover from earlier part of my life. That yeah. it's a NASA book. It's a like a NASA sponsored Charlie Brown book, and it's got Snoopy on a rocket ship. So I thought that was pretty funny when I noticed.
Well, I knew Snoopy was the Red Baron, where he was in WW1 flying
yeah,
his
it.
Doghouse. I remember that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but yeah, later on he became incorporated into the fold of NASA. So, it's
very good,
pretty funny stuff. Pretty funny.
Well,
but
yeah, it's tying all the cultures together, all the ideas that keep people plugged in and involved together. Hey, by the way, speaking of Chris from HoaxBustersCall.com. Are you going to be able to meet up, or are you going to be trying to arrange a call while he's on his California journey?
I talked to him the other day. He said might be able to do a call. I don't know. He's quite a bit of ways away from me, so if he's able to make it down somewhere, that might be possible. I wouldn't. Unfortunately, I wouldn't have any time to drive 100 plus miles down his way, so we'll see if he's able to come up more towards this side of the neck of the wave.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's cool. I was just curious. I know he has fans that might be listening to this, and you here, and maybe they're wondering, or maybe you guys are going to just meet on the phone somewhere.
Yeah. If you live in California, email Chris, tell him you want to meet up with him.
All right, very good. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to finish that Masonic video, the Masonic rituals, and I'm going to, I've been so busy, sometimes I get turned off because the weather is nice. I don't really want to sit in front of my computer, but I'm trying to post three audios with John Lear, who is allegedly the son of the Learjet plane, and Jim Fetzer. And the only reason I'm reviewing that audio is because Max Ratt was playing some John Lear clips, and that prompted me to want to look up John Lear and listen to him be interviewed and just basically review some of my old 9/11 research. And I'm sort of convinced, I'm convincing myself that this John Lear character may have been a fabricated character in some way, because he's the one that introduced the idea that there are 36 space platforms up there. There are 4,000 astronauts, and they always take the extra seats on the space shuttle. He's the one that got me really confused early on in my 9/11 research, because, of course, he's got 9/11. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, just real quick, he's got some pretty bizarre stuff. As much as I've heard him talk about the, you know, no planes and all that type of stuff, yeah, his other stuff is wacko.
Yeah. I guess it's the crazy that's attached to the what I believe is the right idea behind 9/11. Yeah. So, but it was interesting because he does say a lot of the things we believe in about no planes and it's not possible. But
yeah.
Just reviewing his resume, it seems fabricated as well, that he's the most this and the most that and the most this pilot and most accomplished this. I'm almost convinced now that that's all a fabricated nonsense for creating appeal to authority. But the reason it came up is because K-Ham had David Weiss on, who does Deep Inside the Rabbit Hole, which is not an audio series I've really listened to. But Hoy Polloi of Cluesform.info did an interview with him because, once more, David Weiss appears to be on the 9/11 hoax side, but then he mentions he knows people and he saw it happen, etc., etc. So
yeah.
It just seems like he might be part of the 9/11 hoax and on.
Well,
for all those stragglers that are still talking.
I'll look forward to seeing some of that, and if you're not busy tomorrow, we'll do it again.
All right, very good. All right, nice chatting with you, John. HoaxBustersCall.com, signing out.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Hi, everybody. This is Farce Value, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.